The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Rates hiked by Yellen in her last official meeting. Tax bill seems to be a done deal. Say blockchain and stocks rip. And I have something to say about these naysaying chart analysts. All this and much more on episode number 539 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, Andrew Horowitz here, and thanks for joining me this week and, of course, every week as we discuss finance and markets and politics and, to a lesser degree, politics, economics, and all things that matter to your portfolio. There's a lot going on in terms of commentary. I got to tell you, last week we had Harry Dent on. And if you haven't had the opportunity to listen to that, I strongly recommend that you do so. Harry was at least controversial. At best, he was somewhat realistic from his standpoint in terms of what's going to happen with markets, especially what's going to happen closer to 2019, 2020. And I would, again, really recommend that you listen to it. But the comments came in across the board, and there was a lot of people that were angry about the discussion. There was a lot of people that were frustrated. There's a lot of people that said, hey, finally, a breath of fresh air. So I really do recommend that you listen to that particular show last week with Harry Dent. Also coming up next week, we have the end. I think it's the last episode of the year. How time flies. I mean, seriously, a whole year is gone. We have Ben Hunt. What a great writer and philosopher and market pragmatist, I think, is probably some of the ways to look at this. Probably also a great deal of Fed hatred to a degree. And he goes over a lot of the discussion of what he has to say with regard to the Fed on a regular basis in his great writings. But we'll have him on as our guest. He's been a great guest this year. And then we have the best of 2017 coming up as well, that we'll have over the new year. Hopefully you've been paying attention to some of the discussions we've had here, because recently, just a couple of weeks back, we talked about some of the cryptocurrency names related to individual stocks traded that have a high, well, we'll say, there's a lot of PR push around these particular names, and some of these have been going quite crazy. You know, we talked about the GBTC, that's one of the symbols that actually is an ETF or a fund that tracks, I guess more of a fund that tracks the Bitcoin price. And that thing's been hitting an all-time high, which you'd expect, still a significant premium there. But we have things like Social Reality, Riot Blockchain, Overstock, MGTI. All these names have been running around incredibly. In fact, what's really amazing is that we've seen some things run up pretty significantly as they are related to or have been newsworthy related to anything Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain, mining for Bitcoin, mining for currencies of any sort or any relation or just anything to do with the cryptocurrency world. We're seeing a tremendous amount of uptick in that area and really the significant amount of I guess, investor interest in this. Fascination probably is a better way to describe it, but still a good amount of interest. Now, this week, there were two names that were hopping on the bandwagon of blockchain. Again, you put the word blockchain out there and stocks do amazing things. And I think this is an important area to discuss, because we have to separate the PR pump and dump kind of mentality from what's going on, from the momentum trading, fundamentally sound investments that are out there. But let me kind of go through this with you. Maybe you can make up your own mind about what you think is going on with this particular name, okay? So a company called Rich Cigars, symbol RTGR, Rich Cigars. So you probably have an idea of what that is, right? Well, it's probably a cigar company or related to cigars or something like that. Okay. Well, let me give you the down and dirty on this. So the company was originally formed as Rich Cigars, a Florida corporation, in order to distribute, brand, and market tobacco products. As a result of the November 2017 change of control, now the company is being renamed to Intercontinental Technology, Inc., which is now a Colorado corporation. So they moved their domicile to Colorado from Florida. And it is now a holding company for a new subsidiary operation. Okay. Now, what are they doing? So this is a cigar company, a cigar distribution company. And now, as of last week, they've changed around, moved their domicile. Now they're doing something different. What are they doing? Well, they're forming subsidiaries that are going to be investing in the whole idea of developing multinational marketing of proprietary patent-protected products. A lot of P's in there. So they're going to do something that we're not quite sure of. And frankly, it's a nice-sounding thing that probably says they're not quite sure of what they're going to be doing. Development and multinational marketing of proprietary patent-protected products. So some kind of product, something they're going to have. We're not quite sure what that is. And more importantly, the development of a unique cryptocurrency mining business for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, which will be operating on a 24/7 basis. Well, what does that mean? Well, I guess what it means is they're going to be buying a whole bunch of really high-powered operating systems and machines with all sorts of very high level of ability to calculate and crunch numbers. And therefore, what they're going to do is mine for Bitcoin. So what we have is a company that changed what they're doing. They're going to put in all this money, supposedly, to this proprietary patent-protected product. I just got to say that. It's so funny. And developing of this whole mining operation. So what happened? Well, the day before the news came out, the stock was trading at 3 cents. It doubled by the close of the day in the morning. So it went from 3 cents to 6 cents on the open the next day once this news came out. And it moved up to as high as $1.05. Now, that may seem like a big deal. That's 1,700%. If you take it back a day, it was like 2,300% when it was 3%. It closed the day at 70 cents that day, which is still an impressive run. I mean, obviously, it's, you know, from 6 cents on the open to 70 cents, that's pretty substantial. The next day on Friday, it fell 40%. Now, what does this remind you of? Kind of, to me, reminds me of the great pump and dumps that were done with the marijuana stocks for a while. You remember that? That whole craze that, all right, here's what's happening. We have the potential for states doing recreational or some kind of either medical legalization of marijuana. And all these companies that have anything to do with that sector, whether it's bottling or paper or shipping maybe even or growing or fertilizers or farming equipment and anything, especially the small ones, went ballistic. I mean, they went crazy. All you had to do is attach yourself somehow to the idea that you are now related to the marijuana industry in this incredibly hot moment, and people got nutso. Investors went crazy. There was, you know, people running hand over fist, knocking down people. It reminded me of, you know, the door busters when you see people just slamming open the door and then walking and running over and stampeding people to get the cheap deal. And that's what happened with the marijuana industry. Now what's happening is that companies are latching on to this whole idea and building a PR presence and potentially pumping and dumping their stocks. All they have to do is put the word blockchain in there somehow, change the company's direction, talk about Bitcoin, and things get crazy. Another one last week, there was another one too. A company called Longfin, it was a new IPO last week, came out and as a fintech company with an artificial intelligence component to it of some sort, the software they had and the information they had. So you have that going on, right? You have fintech and AI. That's big. That's big. That's a big, you know, that the lights are going off. Oh, we got the fintech and we got AI. That's exciting. Okay. So they came out on the IPO. The next day they announced, you know, if it wasn't enough that they had the AI in the name and the discussion, the PR was going on for that, and fintech, which is, you know, a big deal these days, and you have the whole financial technology side of things and, you know, technology related. If that wasn't enough, the PR machine got going because they announced an acquisition of a company called Zidu.com, which is, wait for it, hold it, blockchain lending. Stock ramped up about 300% post its IPO price, basically because of the blockchain hype. So you're going to see a lot of this going on. You have two choices in this, by the way. One, ignore it. Realize that fundamentally, probably most of these are just pump and dump deals. These are schemes to get people excited about it. They'll go up and then they'll just drop right back down, like that one that dropped 40% the next day. So we went from 6 cents actually on that not Rich's Cigars. It's not called Rich Cigars. It's called Intercontinental Technology, Inc. That company now went from, again, 6 cents to a dollar and change, closed at 70 and then closed down to like 40 cents. So you could either, number one, just ignore this and just look at this as, I'm not dealing with this because it's too aggressive. It's too risky. I don't want to deal with it. Or what you could do is you can hop on the train and, you know, kind of ride these on a momentum basis, but realize that there is a lot of hype involved in this and that you have to be quick. It's difficult even for a professional trader to get on these, much less just find these that are happening. So if you want to do so, just realize that you're really playing with fire here. For many of these, there will be some of these that will play out. But, you know, going up a few thousand percent in a day probably is not normal. If it's a quality company and something that came out on the IPO market and there's something to be said about it and there's some fundamentals, that's great. But if they just change their name and then kind of put in a few fancy words in a press release and then throw in the word blockchain or Bitcoin or cryptocurrency in there, just be careful, okay? There's something, obviously, there's a lot going on right now in that whole arena, but just be careful. So what else happened last week? And we're going to get to a little discussion, by the way, of some other items related to charting and charting analysis, charting analysts, and cryptocurrencies, because I got a little beef here I want to talk about. A little mini rant, we'll call it. I haven't had too much of a rant in a while, but it's something that's really bugging me here. I think there's a lesson to be learned as well. But let's talk about, again, what happened last week. We did see the markets kind of consolidating a bit the first part of the week, and then we saw that Janet Yellen came out. Her last official rate meeting was last week before she hands over the reins to Jay Powell, who will be at this point, at the next meeting, I guess, the one sitting there in the chair talking about rates, being the face of the Fed, getting grilled by Congress, and of course, probably from what we've seen, being very dovish overall. But Janet Yellen, in her last official capacity or last meeting, yes, they did in fact raise rates a quarter of a point. Woohoo! Very artfully handled, I think, the way they did it. You know, they talked about how while they did raise rates, there's still the opportunity to reduce rates if it need be. If the economy slowed down to any reasonable measure, they still have the capacity to do so. Markets were relatively excited for a moment. Then, I guess, by the end of the day, unreactive. It was highly expected and anticipated that this rate increase would come. But what I thought was interesting that it was a day later, we saw some news that came out that the vote for the rate hike was very close. That it was so close that it was even hard to tell, you know, exactly what they were going to do to the very last minute. Now, again, markets had expected this. Economists had expected this. And I think that if they didn't raise rates, they would send out a signal that they were concerned about something. I don't know what. I mean, because, you know, we have unemployment at a low here, 4.1%. We see manufacturing is doing fine. The global backdrop is doing really well. We have the potential for a tax bill that's coming in that will possibly at least goose GDP a little bit, if not a lot, depending on how this all plays out. And when you look at all the statistics and economics and the reports, what is there really to be worried about? And what? Well, one thing. What is it? The one boogeyman. And that's inflation. The very concern that they are going to see a ceiling on inflation. And that is a big concern. So with all these other things out there, the piece of the puzzle that go into play and into looking at what should be the appropriate rate for the economy, what they are looking at and what they're stuck on is this 2% inflation rate, which seems to me, like I've said before, a rather arbitrary number that they used. You know, 2%. Where did they come up with this 2%? But 2% is their number. Even though we've seen that there's a tremendous amount of increase in housing prices, the last Case-Shiller came out, 22% gain on a year-over-year basis. We're seeing the unemployment rate at 4.1% and really not much slack out there. Some rate wage growth that's picking up. We've also seen that the price of school and drugs and a variety of other things have gone up, but the official inflation numbers are not picking up to a point that they feel compelled to say that, yes, we are done with this. We're going to normalize rates in a reasonable fashion. They're waiting 3 years maybe to get rates up, you know, with a quarter point, maybe three times per year. So 75 basis points a year. At that rate, probably 2020. I guess from where we are now, 1.5 plus, about 2020, 2021. If that pace of rate hikes go on, that's when we're going to see normalization. Not to mention the fact that while they've talked about reducing their balance sheet with all the bonds they picked up over the years through their quantitative easing program, that also is going to be very slow. So you have all of this going on, keeping interest rates down artificially by the Fed. And then on top of it, you have them being very wishy-washy about any rate hikes in the future because of this stubbornly, consistently low rate of inflation that they seem to fear. I got to tell you, I'm not really concerned about a deflationary environment right now, in that the time that you have to be concerned about deflation is really during major recessions or even recessions in general or downturns in an economics backdrop. If you have an economic situation and a condition that is pretty strong, you're not really going to have a lot of deflationary pressures where people wait to buy whatever the item is because they think that the price will be a lot lower in the future in an environment where you see very strong economic data. But yet they're obviously, you know, smart. They're the Fed. So somehow they are very reluctant to move very fast. A lot of that probably has to be the fact that they have upwards of, I don't know, what is it, $3.5 trillion of bonds right now sitting on their books. And if they did see a significant move in interest rates, they would obviously get a bit hurt on their bonds in terms of valuation. They don't want to do that. They also don't want to have the government paying any higher amount for bonds that are issued. That would just increase the deficit even more on top of the current deficit, on top of the fact that we have a record debt pile that's going to probably increase with this current tax bill that looks like it's slated to be approved. So it's really not the inflation number. That's what they talk about because it's palatable. We could all deal with that. Oh, yes. They said it's going to be a 2% inflation level. That's what we have to wait for. That's what they said. Well, that's what they said, but does that really mean what is going on is actually that? I don't think so. Don't forget, they've talked about a lot of things over time. The health of the banks in 2006 and 7. Oh, they're solid. They've all passed their tests. That didn't work out so well. They talk about how, you know, there's green shoots back in the day, back in 2008, and it took years. I don't know if there was shoots going on there, but, you know, trying to prop up confidence. That's what they're all about. They're cheerleaders, let's be honest. So I think we need to look at this with a little skepticism and realize the Fed is not all-knowing and kind of all-being. They're not absolutely right. Their economic forecasts have been wrong for years and years and years and years and years. So what they say and what they do are not necessarily matched up. Just use an open eye and an open mind when you hear what they're talking about and realize that, you know, if we really have to pick apart every single word in a Fed statement in order to understand what the subtleties are and how they're changing things, that doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, and how the algos react to every single change when they talk about the Fed has a statement and they say something like that economic activity has grown versus moderately grown versus somewhat grown, and that causes all of a sudden a massive market move one way or the other. If it's either disappointing or if it came above, we went from somewhat to just growth. You know, take out the word somewhat, it's growing. So just you know, again, it's all the same discussion we're having here is understand what you're hearing, what you're seeing, what you're reading, and what you're being told. If we talk about the Fed, same thing. If we talk about the way that companies are changing their names to try to hop on the bandwagon and what happens with this, just understand what's going on there, so that you have a better reference point to make appropriate decisions. At this point, I think it's time to take just a moment to discuss something that I think is pretty important. And I want you to realize that, you know, obviously there are a lot of reasons why you listen, why you're here, why you spend time. And it's all about, you know, making sure that your money and your situation is you know, you're solid for the future. Your financial security is you know, top notch. You're on. You know, things are going well and you want to make sure it stays that way. Or, you know, you're starting out and you want to learn a little bit and you want to understand a little bit more. And you want to understand what's going on with, you know, stocks, what's going on with funds and ETFs and global concerns on a financial basis. And of course, that's what we do. But one of the other things that you have to realize is we also manage money for clients. And I'm just going to throw in this, you know, 2.5 minute quick discussion, especially towards the end of the year. So we have a variety of management programs that we have and strategies that we have for you. And of course, it's open for you. And I want to make sure you know about this, especially, you know, towards the end of the year where you start thinking about, oh, what am I going to do next year? So we have the TDI Managed Growth Strategy, which is a, we'll call it a diverse trading strategy where we have some core positioning in there of high quality growth stocks that are not only growth stocks, but names that have a very consistent growth pattern in terms of earnings and revenue growth and high ROE and margin expansion. We do a really deep look at what are those names out there and try to find those and put those inside the portfolio at certain parameters. We also have some of the Arrow working in there from an algorithm standpoint. We also have some alpha generation. You could find out all about this over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a $50,000 minimum for this particular portfolio strategy. Then we have the Investology for those of you that are looking for a more diverse, longer term style portfolio where you have the opportunity to design your own portfolio and then we manage it for you. So it's the best of the back end of robo-advising and the best of personal financial advice and investment advice. So we've married those two together and came up with Investology with an E, E-N-V-E-S-T-O-L-G-Y, Investology. You can find out more about that over at investology.com or on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. $10,000 minimum there. So that's really available for everybody. It's a really cool product, by the way. You know, we really put a lot of time in the technology behind all this. So I really encourage you to check that out and see what's available with that. And then we have our global allocations. And these are another similar to an asset allocation model. We're using low-cost ETFs, some active mutual funds that are on an institutional basis. And again, all of this is available for you. If you're looking for a little bit more of what we're talking about and how we implement it. And if you like what you hear on what we talk about each and every week on The Disciplined Investor, well, you can just go and check that out. So that has a $500,000 minimum, by the way. The global allocations are a little bit more designed for a larger initial investment. We do a lot more when it comes to some tax planning and helping you with a lot of other things as well. So anyway, that's the end of that spiel. But I hope you take advantage of that. And I hope that if it is something that, you know, while you're here is because you like the things that we talk about, the guests that we bring on, the way that we do interviews, the way that we have discussions of the markets, you realize that maybe you want to get a little bit closer to us and spend some time looking at the different things that we have over on the various strategies. So now let's segue a hard right into a discussion of what's going on with this whole tax bill. Because last week we saw that there is going to be a much more significant level of opportunity for this to get passed. So what do we know? Well, we know about some of the features of it. Finally, the actual tax bill, about 400 plus pages, was released. They're looking to do a vote next week. All the ducks got in a row. All the people that said, no, I don't like this feature, you need to change it. Everything seemed to go along swimmingly. You got a lot of changes that were made at the end, probably without any kind of calculation on how those changes affect the actual amount of taxes that are brought in, the savings, the economic impact. But that's how this whole party has gone. And when I say party, I'm not talking about the Republican Party. I'm talking about the tax party, the whole idea, the whole festival of tax reform. From start to finish, it was pretty much, let's put together something, cut the rate on the corporations, cut some other rates so other people are happy, and then figure out how to make it up somewhere else. So let's talk a little bit about some of the changes that we saw at the last minute in order to get everybody on board that was meaningful to get this thing passed. So the first thing that happened is we saw that the 21% corporate rate is now in play versus a 20% rate, and that's going to start in 2018. There was thought that it would start possibly in 2019 at 20%, but now they brought it back. They said 20%, 21% on corporate tax rate starting in 2018. One of the big issues that was a big concern for companies in the healthcare area, companies with a lot of intellectual property like technology companies, was the corporate AMT. Seemingly, it was left in by accident in the passage by the Senate. So when it was reconciled between the Senate and the House, they pulled that out. So the corporate AMT tax has been removed. The child care credit has been raised from the original bill. We saw a couple of people, Marco Rubio, and a couple others that were very concerned about the limitations of this and how this was not going to be a benefit at the current status for low-income parents and families. So that was changed and pushed higher. So deductions will be higher and the potential credit availability is higher for some people, for, you know, qualifying parents and with children, et cetera. What's interesting with that is, again, they just change it without looking at what the ramifications are to tax receipts. Now, the top personal tax rate has been reduced to 37%. I think there's still seven, so much for tax reform and tax simplification, right? There's still seven tax levels. The rates are bracketed and there's still seven, or there is going to be seven. But the top rate was dropped from over 39 to 37. The estate tax is going to remain, but the exemption on the estate tax is going to be doubled to 11 million. So the state tax, that was something that was supposed to be, you know, taken out entirely as an antiquated and non-essential part. But the problem is that with all the other things that have gone on and the idea that there'll be about a $1 trillion hole in the deficit or in the budget that goes to the deficit, within 10 years, they had to figure out a way to bring back some of the taxes or else this thing was really going to get ugly. And the estate tax, you know, they said dead men don't really argue, so dead people don't argue and don't really fight, unless it's the families, of course. So it's a lot easier to keep that particular tax in and make some other players happy, like the insurance industry. It makes them very happy because they could do estate tax planning and then sell insurance to cover the estate taxes through what's called second to die or survivorship life insurance. And it's actually, there was a lot of lobbyists that were also on the side of keeping the estate tax, which sounds a little crazy, right? Why would somebody want to keep the estate tax? But it's good for some industry, and it was made a necessity by the fact that these other areas were going to bring in less tax. The repatriation tax is now at 14.5%. So that's something. The Obamacare individual mandate is going to be repealed entirely. Now, the state and local taxes, this has been repealed, although taxpayers, it's been a hybrid repealed. Taxpayers will be allowed to choose to deduct up to $10,000 in property taxes or $10,000 in state income taxes. So you have these high property value states that also have state income taxes, whereas before you were able to deduct both your state income taxes off your federal, put it as a credit or a deduction against your state federal income taxes, and also have a deduction for your property taxes. So now you're going to choose an either or. So this is a problem, and this is a real gotcha for those that are living in those states that have state income tax and, you know, like New York, and that have high property values. We'll talk about some planning ideas in a second on maybe what you could do if you fall into any of these circumstances. Also, the mortgage interest deduction is limited to loans of less than $750,000. So that's another gotcha also for those high property areas that have individuals that have mortgages over $750,000. So there's a lot of other little things in here, but basically these are the core things that were changed to get this thing passed. It looks like that probably, I would say, Tuesday, Wednesday at the latest, they want to get this thing done before Christmas. You know, they're calling it a Christmas present. It is clearly a Christmas present and a Hanukkah and a Kwanzaa and a modern day miracle, actually, with regard to corporations. This is fantastic. For individuals, not so good. Not so bad, not so good. There's some things in here that are beneficial, but we really have to see when we start doing our taxes what this is all going to mean, because there's a lot of things that were pulled and pushed, and it's all going to depend on where you really fall in the range of the tax rates and what your income is and how this is going to all play out, because some people are going to actually be paying more taxes. The higher your income, probably the less tax you'll pay, but probably the lowest and into the mid is going to, looks like they're going to potentially pay some more taxes here. Now, what are some planning ideas? Let's talk about this, because I think this is important. So what can you do? What should you be thinking about before the end of the year? And you only have about 10 days, right? So you got to think about this. So 10 or maybe 14 days. So what are you going to do with the knowledge of what the tax plan looks like is going to be approved as, and into, you know, it's going to happen in 2018. So it's very quick. Here's a couple ideas for you. First is you can actually try and attempt to prepay your property taxes this year. And that's for people who pay over $10,000 in property taxes. If you pay over $10,000, since you're going to be limited to either $10,000 in property taxes or $10,000 in state income taxes, if you can, try to prepay your property taxes this year now. I know it's you don't know exactly what it's going to be, but prepay as much as you can now so that you can get the deduction this year, because you may be limited on what you get next year. Is that clear? I hope that's clear. So if you could prepay it now, and avoid the fact that there's going to be a limitation next year, you just have a one shot at doing this. Find out if you can prepay some of it. Send that check to what you know think. So if you pay, let's say, $15,000, send it this year and tell them to credit for your next year's account, but you paid it in advance this year, and hopefully you'll be able to get a deduction for it, because next year it could be limited. Now, depending on if you itemize or not, it may be a good idea to consider giving to charity in advance this year for next year's donation. Because, again, it all depends if you're itemizing or not. But if you're itemizing, and there are some limitations on this in terms of how much you can itemize, et cetera. You may want to front run and send in any kind of donations, you know, now in 2017, so you get a much greater opportunity to deduct that for 2017. You know, listen, 2019 and, or, you know, moving forward, you're not going to have a choice to do any of this. So at least you get a little benefit now. Now, if you usually make estimated tax payments, you may want to pay your fourth quarter estimated tax for state income tax before the year's over. Right? Pay it this year. So you can definitely get the deduction this year in advance instead of paying it sometime after January. So pay in advance, make sure you get it in there. And if you're self-employed, you should probably wait until January to send invoices for payments that you typically receive in December or that you typically send out in December to get paid. So for example, because there's going to be some benefit for pass-through entities for self-employed people, LLCs and pass-through partnerships of any sort, subchapter S corporations, what you may want to do is not take in any additional income this year, but take it in next year because you'll get a much greater tax benefit. So don't send those invoices out until January 1st so you can postpone that. So four different planning ideas that may come in handy there for you. And I'll put those, just list those again over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com under this episode, show notes for episode number 539. Now another swing, now this time to the left. And I talked at the top of the show about something that's kind of bugging me, something that's kind of aggravating, getting me under my skin. And I think we need to discuss this and really go off on this because, you know, I got to tell you, you listen to all these commentaries from technical analysts, you know, those chart readers, the people that really focus only on it and believe it and breathe it and sleep with this. It embodies them. Charts, the only way to know how to invest, fundamental investing, or as they call it, you know, funny economics, fundamental analysis. They look at this and they say, oh, no. You know, it's only price that pays. And it's my understanding that technical analysts, the true ones, they're not looking at fundamentals. It doesn't matter the company, doesn't matter the security, doesn't matter what it is. They're just looking at price action on the chart. Maybe they're using some indicators. You know, maybe they're using moving averages. Maybe they're using stochastics. Maybe they're looking at ranges. Maybe they're looking at market profile. I don't know, whatever they're looking at. But it's only price that pays. Follow the trend. You know, they talk about the trend is your friend. And they just talk about sticking to the facts, price direction, price movement, volume. Block out the news, no emotions. You know what I'm talking about, right? You get the picture here? You know those people, right? Now, all of a sudden, I follow a bunch of these guys on Twitter. I read a lot of work on technical analysis. And some of the biggest, well, we'll say some of the pompous and the big boy, oh, you shouldn't be doing this. It's only this because the chart says that. You know, all these guys, or many of these guys that I've seen, you know, have been talking about how they're right about their chart calls and it's only this, it's only that. And again, teaching you to stay away from any of the news and emotions and anything that you may have a bias on, just look at the chart and follow my lead. And now all of a sudden, a lot of these guys, particularly on Twitter, are ganging up on the cryptos. You know, they're like, let's stay with Bitcoin for this discussion, okay? They're like, I wouldn't invest in that. You know, this is crazy. It's a bubble. This is something I would never own in my own portfolio, this and that, because of this, because I don't understand it, because of this and that. I'm thinking to myself, wait a second here. Wait. I thought it was all about the trend, the direction, it's only price that pays, it's only the chart, don't look at the bias, don't look at all the things we talk about. But yet they're sitting here, oh no, can't invest in that because it's a bubble. It's, I don't understand it. It's not liquid. It's not, wait a minute. Again, they're whining. They're constantly negative on this Bitcoin. Like they totally forgot their training. And all of a sudden, they have these biases. It's based on, I guess, fundamentals. Because if you look at Bitcoin, you try to prove to anybody what the fundamentals are, a little bit hard. Yes, there's, I know, for those of you that like any of this, there's plenty of opportunity. I forget that for a second. I'm talking about the fundamentals like when we look at a stock. The valuation. The intrinsic value. Especially when you look at the price run. So why I'm so frustrated here is whether or not you like Bitcoin or not, or any of the other cryptocurrencies, Ethereum, Litecoin, or Ripple, or Neo, or Monero, I don't care what you have, whatever it is. And these chart traders who are supposed to be very strict, it's like they're chart twisting. You know? They're making the game up. So instead of letting the chart tell them the story, like it's supposed to be with technical analysis, and I believe that, you let the chart speak. As a matter of fact, sometimes, I remember a few different times, the lesson on charting 101, on technical analysis 101, you know what? Cover up the name of the stock. Don't even look at it, because if you start looking at it and you see a stock name, you may be biased about it. You may know something about it. Forget that. Just look at the indicators that you use and the charting patterns, whether you have head and shoulders or you have island reversals or you have, you know, flags that are breaking or descending or ascending triangles, moving average, you know, rollovers or whatever it is. That's what you should be using for your basis in your investment. And meanwhile, now they're all negative on this. And I start wondering, why is that? Is it that they're pissed off they didn't get in, so now they're making up a whole story? Kind of seems like it. But this is a big mistake. This is not how this works. Technical analysis, if you want to stick to technical analysis, I think this is a really good discussion to have, because I think there is room for both. As a matter of fact, I truly believe that there is room for both technical analysis and fundamental analysis when looking at and researching a stock. Or researching maybe an index. Or even the situation when it comes to cryptocurrencies. If there is fundamentally available, or the information is available on a fundamental basis, and you can use that for a stock, or maybe for an index to a degree, hey, that's good. When it comes to something that's not as fundamentally sound, I mean, to a degree, currencies in a little way. Gold, you know, what's the fundamental base of a gold or silver? It's hard to really pin. But when you look at this and you try to be a strict technical analyst, then really you need to understand that you can't have a bias in this and you can't look at any of the news and the information. Fundamentally, yes. So we like to go with a fundamental analysis first when it comes to equities, looking at what is the basis of why this is something that's, you know, wise to invest in. If you're doing a swing trade, you know, you may want to look at that and some of the particular catalysts that are coming along on this, and then look for the price action to follow through and then confirmation of it to either get in or move out or go short or whatever it is. But, you know, I guess the whole thing here is that I got to say, guys, something doesn't add up. And I've lost a lot of respect for many of these analysts that have been preaching and almost boasting about their wonderful ability to project a bull market run in almost every security. I'm thinking to myself, guys, it's not that hard necessarily to look at a particular stock in the market environment that we're in now and say we're in a bullish environment. I mean, why are you trying to prove stuff so incredibly? And why are you trying to pound the table? Whereas you missed out on, I don't even want to talk about the percent move. And yes, it was fast. And yes, it's been parabolic. And yes, it's been a little crazy. But still, I'm not saying that you should be a believer in Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies. I'm just saying that there is something wrong with all of these experts on technical analysis that are not able to see the forest through the trees when it comes to this, and that it's really a problem. Yes, I think that the cost of and the price for many of these cryptocurrencies, or particularly Bitcoin, and they're pretty frothy in terms of, even on a technical analysis standpoint, from where they were to where they moved to potentially this whole speculative mania that's going on. And there's clearly a lesson to be learned here. You know, think about this whole move, whether you're in it or not, on how you approach your biases related to a stock, related to an index, related to any currency, futures, commodity. Think about your biases. So many people thought that when Donald Trump was elected, the market was going to crash at 30, 40, 50%, whatever it was. There was probably a lot of reason why they believed that. They were pretty steadfast in that belief. And, a little time went on and markets didn't crash. There was a little hiccup here and there, but nothing major. And then the whole tax thing came out. And it took a long time. There's a lot of movement and a lot of fits and starts, and it kept on moving the markets pretty much straight up. And if, in fact, you had a negative bias because of one data point and you didn't follow the charts and you were biased because you're either a hater or a Democrat or something that didn't believe in it and thought that was good, everything operates the way it operates. So back to the comment of only price that pays is the right thing to play. When in fact you're wrong, which is, this is very hard. By the way, it's very hard for everybody. It's not just you, it's not just me, it's hard for everybody. When you're wrong, figure out how to adjust. Figure out where your bias is. Think about whether or not when you're looking at a stock, when you're looking at an index, futures, come on, are you just happy to abandon your research efforts on that name because you have some kind of a history? You don't like it? You know, I hate Best Buy. I'm not buying it. I'm not going after that stock. Meanwhile, the stock moving in the right direction, whether it's on the short or long side, right? It all depends. Or how about, I love Under Armour. One of the best shirts around. It's fantastic. It fits well. I buy that. That's what I wear. Meanwhile, the stock goes down what? You know, from down 50, 60% from the tie. And that's because you like their shirts, you know? Or you know, for that matter, you like a particular car or you like a particular store or you don't like a particular brand or you're gluten-free and you don't want to buy a company that, you know, has a lot of products that sell gluten or you just don't like the tobacco companies. I mean, think about all the potential biases we all have. We all have them. I think the best investors don't necessarily have a bias. And that's hard. That's hard for everybody. They admit when they're wrong. It may not be immediately, but they say, you know what? The facts have changed. Here's what I believed the facts were for whatever reason. The facts have changed. The markets did not crash post-election. I'm going to give it a few days, weeks, months, see how things play out. And then I'm going to look at this again and try to understand what my decision was based on back at that point, and has that decision changed now based on the new information that's available. So as new information is available, it is reflected in markets and it should be able to be reflected by you, by me, by investors. Not this crap that we're talking about with these technical analysts, quote unquote, that are selective in what they believe is a good play versus a bad play. And again, it's not whether or not I like Bitcoin or all that. Forget that. It's a great lesson. It's a great place to look at what's going on. As a matter of fact, I think this entire move and the exaggeration and the euphoria and the insanity to a degree with how people are going out of their minds with this is a great lesson. And probably we want to check back in a year or so from now and see how this all played out. and how then we could identify these kind of situations earlier in their process, earlier in the genesis of the idea, so that we can hop on board and know what to do with it. A lesson to be learned, no question about that. I think for all of us, me too, I'm watching it from a lesson standpoint. I'm looking at this and trying to understand, okay, you know, why didn't I get in on this at 200? You know, I have some Bitcoin, but why didn't I get in on it at 500? You know, why did I wait? Well, I have some of it at lower prices, but why did I wait to this price? What was it that stopped me from doing this? And depending on how this all plays out, do I stay in? Do I get out? What do I do with this? So again, it doesn't matter what the name is that we're talking about. It's all about how you invest, understanding the potential for biases, opinion, and using the facts to your benefit in the investing process. I hope that helps a little something there, but I think it's a great microcosm to really dig into and understand about ourselves as investors and what may be stopping some of us from getting into certain areas, certain stocks, certain names, while others are happily on board. And you look at them, you're like, what, huh? Wait, that's stupid. That because this and that and this and that and this. Meanwhile, they're sitting there making money and you're like, oh, that's stupid. That's stupid. And you're sitting there, oh. And then one day you'll be like, oh, I was right. Meanwhile, they rode the stock from $2 to $12. It went to 18, but they got out of 12. Now it's down to 4. And you're like, ha ha, I knew it would never stay up. And like, wait a minute. You just missed that whole run just because you wanted to be right. So for the new year, one of the resolutions I want you to do is really try to understand more about yourself as an investor. Try to spend a little time with yourself, questioning yourself, looking in the mirror and saying, "What? Why am I thinking that?" As you make your decisions based on solid research, I want you to just, again, reflect on, am I putting in and overlaying any of my own opinion that is not really aligned with the research result that I'm finding? You see a stock that does really well in the fundamentals, the chart looks good, and you're like, nah, I think it's blah, 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 blah. Johnny told me it was this or that. I heard rumor that. This analyst downgraded the stock or upgraded the stock. So for the new year, our job is to be better investors and to really understand who we are as investors. What is it that is making us move in certain directions or not? What's prohibiting us from making good, or what is providing us and helping us make bad decisions? And again, you can make good decisions that don't work out well. That's also, I made a good decision. I researched all the information, no bias, no overlay. I looked at the fundamentals, looked at the technical, everything looked fine. And then something happens and doesn't work out. That's investing. That's a different story than making a bad decision based on good research. You understand what I'm saying? So in other words, you do the good research, things work out well, and you're like, no, I'm not doing this. Or you do the research and you say, nah, this is not really good stock, but you end up doing it anyway because you're overlaying it. And then doesn't, you know, it may work out, it may not. But again, just something to think about for the new year. I hope you take it to heart. We're going to wrap it up. Again, visit thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We want you as investors and we want to help you out. So come on over there and check out all the different strategies we have. We'll be back next week with Ben Hunt. If you have any questions, you know where to get it over on the Ask Andrew. Follow me on Twitter. I got lots to say. Andrew Horowitz, one word. And of course, listen each and every week while I spend some time on, I would say, the important and interesting and a little bit lighter side of business with John C. Dvorak on DH Unplugged live, 9 o'clock. Each and every week, go over to DH Unplugged. There's a chat room as well, or find in iTunes or anywhere that fine podcasts are given away. Thanks for your ear. I'll see you again next week.
The The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.